praise thee, Lord, for thy great plan, that we thy dwelling place may be.
Welcome to Life Study of the Bible, brought to you by Living Stream Ministry, featuring the ministry of Watchman Nee and Witness Lee, two ministers of God's economy who served together in China for nearly 20 years. Watchman Nee was imprisoned by the Chinese government in 1952 and remained there until his death in 1972. Following his imprisonment, Witness Lee carried on this ministry in Taiwan and eventually in America and ultimately around the world. He served the Lord for more than 70 years before going to be with him in 1997. His major contribution was through a 21-year labor he called Life Study, an exhaustive commentary on the entire Bible. This program is based on those messages. Before we join today's show, we'd like to give you our website where you can find more programs just like this one. It's lsmradio.org. Again, lsmradio.org. Now, here's our show today. The handwriting is on the wall. Well, nearly all of us have heard this phrase, but did you know that it comes from Daniel chapter 5? Stay with us today because we're in for quite an application of this story, and Francis Ball is here to help us. Francis, welcome to the program, and I'm glad you're here to help us interpret the handwriting on the wall.
Well, I'm glad that it's written down so I can see it.
Francis, this is chapter 5 of Daniel, and the writing on the wall from a mysterious hand is the story here. I think today we'll read a lot of chapter 5 to give our listeners the full impact of this story. Francis, before we start reading these verses in chapter 5, we find the main character today that Daniel encounters is this man, this king named Belshazzar. What do we know about him?
Belshazzar is a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar was in our previous message on this line. He's a forerunner of Belshazzar.
Okay, let's pick up these verses to get the context of the handwriting on the wall. We begin, Belshazzar the king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords, and he drank wine before 1,000. Belshazzar, under the influence of the wine, commanded men to bring the gold and silver vessels that Nebuchadnezzar his forefather had taken out of the temple which is in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought the golden vessels that had been taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Francis, this was quite a humiliation, quite an insult to the God of heaven, wasn't it?
It certainly was. To take the very items that had been used in the worship of the one true God and use them now for the worship and the praise to these idols.
Well, we're going to see that this really provides a setting for another victory of the young overcomers that the Lord had sovereignly arranged to be in this house now of Belshazzar the king in Babylon. Let's join Witness Lee for the first portion today.
Chapter 5 continues chapter 4 to give us a clear view of the spiritual lessons. Belshazzar, under the influence of the wine, commanded men to bring the gold and silver vessels that Nebuchadnezzar, his forefather, had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem, that he, his lords, his wives, and his concubines may drink from them, from the vessels, the holy vessels captured from the temple in Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. This was a kind of what? Insult. When they were drinking this way, enjoying themselves in a kind of adulterous way, insulting way to God, all of a sudden, some writing came out by hand on the wall. Especially the king saw that. You better read verses 5 and 9. Read the text of Daniel.
Well, okay, Francis, following our brother's encouragement here, let's read these verses, chapter 5, verses 5 through 9. And in these verses, we really see the response of God to the king's insult here. At that moment, the fingers of a man's hand came forth and wrote opposite the lampstand upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw that part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance changed, and his thoughts alarmed him, and the joints of his hips loosened, and his knees began to knock together. The king cried loudly to bring the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the diviners. The king responded and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Any man who reads this writing and declares its interpretation to me shall be clothed in purple and shall have a chain of gold around his neck and shall rule as the third ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing nor make its interpretation known to the king. Then King Belshazzar was greatly alarmed. His countenance was further changed, and his lords were perplexed. Francis, this king, who now has just insulted God with his drunkenness and abusing the articles from the temple, was a perplexed man to the extent that even his knees, it says, were knocking together. There was no one able to interpret the writing of this mysterious hand that appears out of nowhere to write on the wall. Maybe you can give us a short application before we go on with the story and Daniel's entrance on the scene to give the king the Lord's word to him.
Well, I feel like, Chris, that there is quite a good example here if we realize that this king, in his insulting God, and by taking the furnishings from the tabernacle to use those vessels for his drinking and his debauchery, that this was really an insult against God in such an extreme way. And then suddenly, this hand comes out writing on the wall, and this should have really sobered him up very much. And somewhat it did, because he cried out then for those conjurers and the Chaldeans and the diviners, all the wise men, he called them to come and interpret this dream. The lesson I get from this, Chris, is that when we have something unusual take place under God's dealing with us, that our first reaction in our blindness, in our independence, in our self-confidence, and what we think is our authority, we call for those people that we think are the wisest among men to come and give us an interpretation. This is a very sick reaction, because what is needed is someone who knows God and knows how to interpret these unusual happenings. And so he didn't turn there first. He turned to get what people today would go to their counselors and their doctors and their psychologists to try to get them to explain what's happening to them.
This is really, of course, the way of human society, is to look to God last rather than first.
Right.
We're always running to those who seem to be the possessors of great human wisdom and knowledge to try to help us out of these incredible difficulties. But this king, either a son or at least a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar, his father or forefather had some very specific and undeniable dealings with the God of heaven. It's amazing that Belshazzar still would not be quick to turn that direction.
That's right. He needed someone to come and recommend the same kind of a person to come to his aid as Nebuchadnezzar had.
Well, he's about to get some assistance here. Let's go on and read a few more of these verses, Francis, beginning in verse 10. The queen mother, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet house. The queen mother responded and said, "O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts alarm you, nor your countenance change. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is a spirit of the holy gods, and in the days of your forefather, light and insight and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your forefather, O king, made him chief of the magicians, conjurers, Chaldeans, and diviners, because an excellent spirit and knowledge and insight and the interpretation of dreams, the declaring of riddles, and the resolving of problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Let Daniel now be called, and he will declare the interpretation." Well, Francis, before we go back to Witness Lee for this section, this is interesting, because we're going to see Daniel now introduced into the scene, And what's particular is that, once again, he has clear and strong words for this king who did not seem to learn the lesson from his forefather Nebuchadnezzar.
Yes, that's right. He no doubt knew what had happened to his forefather Nebuchadnezzar, and yet he didn't take any warning from that. He was just involved with this kind of debauchery and this kind of unusual thing happening. This divine intervention, I would say, by the handwriting on the wall had really perplexed him to such an extent that he completely just discarded anything of the past and never learned anything from what had happened to his predecessor. So it's very interesting here that the queen mother comes in and has words of wisdom, and she refers to this one in the kingdom who was one of the captives from Judah, and he is able to interpret these dreams. She refers to him as Daniel,
yeah,
not by the name that was given to him by King Nebuchadnezzar,
right,
of Belteshazzar. So that's a very significant thing. That shows that she had respect to the name that he had when he was brought into captivity. But now, the point is, with this Belshazzar, he has no regard, doesn't give any consideration to what has happened before, that he might learn how to deal with God in a way of realizing who he is.
Well, let's go back to Witness Lee, Francis. We're going to see how the king is brought further to try to learn this lesson.
Then Daniel came in. You read this, you could see Daniel took what transpired in the preceding chapter as a lesson, not only to Nebuchadnezzar, but to all his descendants. Nebuchadnezzar, he was very much disciplined by God. After chapter 4, there's no more record of Nebuchadnezzar. The only record about him was a lesson. I would say that was the good point of Nebuchadnezzar's biography. The biography ends in a good lesson, and you have to listen to his praise after that lesson learned, right? It's very good. As descendants of him, all should learn of him. All should learn the lesson. But this Belshazzar, he didn't care for that lesson. So Daniel came in. He asked Daniel to tell him what the writing meant. He didn't expect that Daniel would refer him to his forefather's lesson with a rebuking expression and rebuking tone. You, King Belshazzar, you knew all these things, yet you don't behave yourself. And when you drank with those holy vessels captured by your forefather from the holy temple of God. And you did this, surely, is to insult him. He couldn't stand this. Now, you have to know God has numbered your kingdom. To this point, then Daniel interpreted that writing to him. And that means what? That means God has numbered your kingdom and brought it to an end. And then you have been weighed in the scale. There is a heavenly scale and found to be lacking. You're lacking. Your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Here, the record doesn't say whether he repented, he had some change or not. I think there was no time for him to do that. In that very night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was slain. And that's the end of the Babylonian Empire. Here, we all have to learn the lesson. If we got some lesson of God, we have to regard that. If we disregard, we'll suffer.
Well, Francis, now Belshazzar has gotten the interpretation. I'm not sure that he's happy about having received it, and it foretells the soon end of his reign about to come to pass due to this failure to, as Witness Lee said, failure to learn a lesson. Maybe you could comment on this last word of Witness Lee's. He said something like, here we all have to learn a lesson. If we get some lesson of God, we have to regard that. If we disregard, we'll suffer.
Surely there is a lot of lesson in this. And if we are not serious about the Lord's dealing with us, we're going to miss His lesson for us. It reminds me of a verse in Hebrews chapter 12 where it says, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you're reproved by Him. The tendency in this case, of course, was to not pay attention to what the Lord had done to his forefather, and he completely disregarded the situation with him and never learned the lesson for his own experience at this point. And that's a danger that we face, too. When the Lord does deal with us or give us some experience that would cause us to realize that He's not pleased with us, we need to take that seriously. Even if we recognize what He has done in other lives before us, we could certainly learn from those lessons, as Belshazzar could have from Nebuchadnezzar. Had he really paid attention to the seriousness of it, he would have realized that he was in deep trouble with the God whom he had insulted. But he didn't pay attention to it. He didn't regard it. He didn't take it seriously. So this is the result of his disregard of his sin. We have to realize that God will deal with sin. And not only the unbelievers, but also the believers must be serious about the lessons.
I think one of the points here that you're bringing out that strikes me very much. Of course, we all sin, and God has provided a way for us in His redemption through the shed blood of Christ to go on. But there is an obvious disregard here that is apparent in this man, mm-hmm. Belshazzar, that Daniel points out to him in your word a moment ago. He knew the story of Nebuchadnezzar, and he knew his end and the Lord's involvement with him. But there's an absolute kind of disregard or respect that really seems to be playing into his demise and this horrible, tragic outcome of this great king.
Yes, certainly, that is the case. And when you consider what he was doing, drinking the wine from the vessels that had been stolen out of God's tabernacle or temple, and then the Lord brought this very unusual experience to pass suddenly and sobered him up very much, but still he was not serious about this was God's dealing and sought for a natural way to explain it until Daniel came in and really made the interpretation of the whole scene, the writing on the wall, clear to him that his kingdom was over.
Well, Francis, let's go back to Witness Lee for our final portion today. Actually, more applications from this story of Daniel in chapter 5. And how to be, and this is the point I want our listeners to really look for in this last section, how to be simple and to be kept one with God, not caring for the worldly kingdom. Here's Witness Lee once again.
Don't care for the glory, don't care for the world kingdom, only set our heart in God. We only have one heart, that is for God. We only take plain, simple food. And food here, you have to realize, including everything we receive. Just learn to be simple, to take the simple things all the time, just to take the simple things, simple food, simple clothing, simple house, simple car. Everything simple. That keeps you one with God. Then you will be the most wise man on this earth.
Francis, I think it's important as we consider this last point from Witness Lee that we realize we're hearing this now from a man who had served God his entire life, was well into his 80s, approaching his 90s when he spoke this word. I'm just touched that this story of the king's failure can be applied on the positive side to us by the illustration here of a simple diet. And of course, diet applies to everything we receive, not just, of course, the food we eat. Maybe you can help us, Francis, to learn to be simple.
Well, this is one thing I think we really need, and I confess I really need. The whole world was invented by Satan to distract us away from God. The way these overcomers in this book are overcoming all these particular obstacles and temptations is by learning to be simple. For example, we've had the illustration of the men that were with Daniel. As young men, they were offered all kind of dainties from the king's table.
Right.
But they refused all of this kind of eating, and they kept very simple in their diet. And as you pointed out, the lesson we get from this is that diet is everything that comes into us.
Right.
So we need to be very simple in the way we live, even the way we eat, and the things that we have and the things that we do. The more simple we are, the more set on God we can be. The more our thoughts can be on God, the more our thoughts can be on His purpose and His goal. But the more we get complicated, and the whole world is designed, as I said, to complicate us and to distract us away from God. So the way to overcome is to turn back to the simplicity. Simple in so many ways, as Brother Lee pointed out, a simple car, a simple house, all these kind of simple matters. The more simple we keep it, the more we can be centered on God. There is a real lesson here, and that lesson is to be simple and not be distracted by any kind of power, any kind of authority that we surmise that we have. So we have an illustration here in Daniel chapter 1, and we have a further illustration here of this kind of living in Daniel chapter 5, where these men were occupied with their greatness and their kingdom, their importance, and also with their entertainment, all the things that would distract them away, just seeking after greatness. You remember when Nebuchadnezzar walked on the roof, he said, "Isn't this Babylon that I have built and all these things I have built up?" And a person like this is very, very complicated and very much distracted by his own greatness. So God gave him a real lesson. And thank the Lord, with Nebuchadnezzar, the end result was that he did praise God for the lesson that he got. But with Belshazzar, there's no such indication that he had any repentance or took seriously all of this dealing that the Lord gave him. So I just say again, Chris, to answer the question, I believe to be simple is the way to be an overcomer. We simply love the Lord. We simply serve the Lord. We simply are for the Lord. And we simply want Christ to be our life. This way, the Lord can have his overcomers.
Francis, that's a wonderful spiritual, experiential lesson for all of God's people to learn. I think it's maybe a good spot to end this program. I might just say in the way of wrap-up here, this chapter, chapter 5, becomes a kind of watershed in the book of Daniel. Of course, we saw in chapter 2 this great image that was in the dream by Nebuchadnezzar, the head of gold, which represented Nebuchadnezzar and the kingdom of Babylon. But the head of gold eventually is replaced by the next part of the vision, which was the shoulders and arms of silver. And that represents the kingdom of the Medo-Persians, which now, this very night, of course, replaced the Babylonian kingdom. And that was the real lesson or the real word foretelling Belshazzar of his end, and exactly it happened that night. And now we are no longer occupied with the empire of Babylon, but Darius the king comes in as the Medo-Persian, and this affords a way ultimately for God's people to be released from their captivity. So we have the God of heaven still ruling over the situation, despite the outward appearance that things are still not quite that good with his people, the children of Israel. I thought it would be helpful to point that out as we wrap up this week and prepare for next week. We're really going to be talking about a new king, a new empire, still ruling in the same geographical region of Babylon. But now Darius, as the king of the Medo-Persian Empire, will be on the scene. Thank you for your help today, Francis, and this week on this life study of Daniel.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be here.
And we'll invite you back very soon.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to leave you with our toll-free number and invite you to contact us. We have much printed material to supplement these broadcasts, and our toll-free number is 1-888-LIFE-STUDY. That's 888-543-3788. Once again, for Francis Ball today, I'm Chris Wilde. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for listening to Life Study of the Bible with Witness Lee, brought to you by Living Stream Ministry. The focus of Living Stream is the works of Watchman Nee and Witness Lee, two co-laborers with the Lord in China in the first half of the 20th century. after World War II, Witness Lee brought this ministry first to Taiwan, then later to North America, and eventually to the entire world. For more than 20 years, he spoke these life study messages, unveiling how each book of the Bible shows God's eternal plan. God, through Christ, wants to dispense his life and nature into redeemed man, so that man would become God's expression, enlargement, counterpart, and habitation. These studies go far beyond mere doctrine and unveil a personal, practical, and experiential Christ. In these short 26-minute programs, we summarize and condense Witness Lee's rich speaking. But to enjoy all the riches in these messages, we hope you'll visit our website at lifestudy.com. There, you can read all of the life study messages absolutely free of charge. You can even create your own life study reading schedule or download more life study audio programs just like this one, and all at no cost. Again, the website, lifestudy.com. Thanks for listening.